Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Gift of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. I am your host, Mary O'Malley, and today we are exploring how to turn upsets into gold. What do I mean by that? Well, life is certainly a roller coaster ride, and it becomes easy, and then it gets difficult, and it is joyful, and then it's sorrowful, and we have been conditioned to resist when it gets difficult. When we get upset, when we get overwhelmed by life, and we try to hold on to the good times, and this is a recipe for suffering. To resist what is unpleasant is like being in quicksand, and the more you resist it, the more stuck you get. So I want to share with you a story out of my life that really shows what it's like to go towards an upset rather than away, and the gifts that will come when you do. So I live in a very sensitive body, and I was very ill when I was young, and when I was 3, they took me off wheat, eggs, dairy, and chocolate, and put me on Benadryl, and my mother called me her little bull in a china shop. Well, of course, can you imagine being on Benadryl? People take Benadryl to go to sleep at night. And so I have dealt my whole life with this very, very sensitive body, especially around food. And so I have times when, even though I eat pretty well, that inflammation in my body just goes crazy. It's hard to sleep at night because if I lay on my ears, they are on fire, or if I touch things with my hands, they will bruise. And I was told that's because the inflammation is so strong in my body, the little capillaries that are in your ears and your hands become swollen, and that's why they become so painful. So it has been a very fierce teacher of mine, and mostly I'm grateful for it because it has kept me on the path of awakening, because falling into the despair of this or the frustration of this or the self-judgment that comes from this at times only made things worse. And so I was really trained by my body to actually be present for life as it is, to move beyond the liking and disliking mind and actually be curious about what I was experiencing. So I had 2 surgeries last year, and both of them I had complications from. And I just wasn't feeling very well. And my last surgery was in August. And finally, by May of the next year, I thought, well, this not feeling well probably is not coming from the surgery. So that's what I thought it was. And so I went to my doctor, and she did blood tests and told me everything was fine. So then I went for my physical in July, and she did her yearly blood tests. And come to find out, she missed in May that my platelets were high, you know. And so she sent me to a blood doctor at Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, and sure enough, I have what is called, oh God, I can't remember. I think it's called, one of its names is essential thrombocytosis. So, and it comes from inflammation in your body. Well, they're not, you know, they can't definitively say that, but that's what they say generally. It probably comes, you know, from inflammation, and it is a mutation in my bone marrow. And so this is the perfection of life. I had a wonderful doctor for years that closed her practice, and so I was working with this nurse practitioner, the one that missed the high platelets, but then caught them in July because they were even higher. And so I was searching for a new doctor, and I found one in July, 1st of July, and she is so beloved that I couldn't get to see her until late in September. And so on the day that I got the results back from the blood doctor that I did have this mutation in my bone marrow, the next day was the appointment with this new doctor, and as I share with her everything was going on, you know, both my history of a sensitive body and then what the blood tests are saying and so on and so forth, she asked me, are you willing to have a second opinion? I kind of perked up and said, do you mean maybe I don't have this? And she said, no, you have this, and you'll have this for the rest of your life. But I really want you to see this new blood doctor. I really like him, and he also does alternative approaches. And so it took a number of weeks to get in to see him, and he said, yes, you do have this mutation in your bone marrow, and yes, you need to take this chemotherapy drug. And then we'll see what comes out with your blood tests and so on and so forth. But there's a small chance I may be able to get you on this new drug that is, you know, it would be off label, so we have to work with the manufacturer, and they have been working with a number of people with your diagnosis, and it has very, you know, wonderful results. But it doesn't make you sick like the chemotherapy drug did. So I started taking the chemotherapy drug on a Saturday night, and I was so sick the next day. Oh, my goodness. So I called the new blood doctor on Monday morning and said, I don't think I can take this drug. And the nurse said, I checked with the doctor. He really wants you to take the drug. Why don't you take it for 2 days, and then I'll call you back on Wednesday. So I thought, okay, I can do this for 2 days. And I learned something from Stephen Levine about when you take pills, especially pills that are difficult to take, you hold them in your hand and you bless them and you let your body know that this is coming and you let your body know what, you know, what it's all about. But still, it really made me sick. So Wednesday came, was really excited to hear from her, didn't hear anything. Then I called the next day and said, boy, I really need to talk to you because this is very, very, I have a very sensitive body, and this is very, very difficult for my body. You know, my body is really traumatized by this medication. And nobody called. And so I woke up on Friday morning, and I was in a very familiar place. This is all too much. I feel like I'm all alone. You know, I've been abandoned. And as I sat and, you know, at the beginning, I was really caught in all those stories. But slowly and surely, I made my way out of the stories, back to my breath, back into my body. And then my heart opened, and I was just present in a very tender-hearted way with how difficult this has been for my mind, you know, because it's very scary, and how difficult this has been for my body. And then I asked the question of life, should I call again? And life said, no, don't call again. You know, this is ultimately for you. And I do trust that. I do know that. I've lived enough years to see that what's in the way is the way. And so the nurse called over the weekend, and she said, the doctor really wants you to continue to take this drug, and he wants to do a bone marrow biopsy. And that may help in your application for this new drug. I thought, okay, I can take it. We're going to do the bone marrow biopsy on Wednesday. Okay, so again, I geared myself up for, you know, 4 more days of taking this chemotherapy drug. And then an hour before I got in my car to go down to the bone marrow test, they called and said, oops, we don't have any bone marrow test kits. Oh, my heart just dropped, you know. And I said, when can you get them in? Well, we could probably get one in tomorrow, we think. I said, can I come tomorrow? No, you can't. Can I come on Friday? No, the doctor doesn't want to see you on Friday. Okay, can I come on Monday? And she said, I'll go check with the doctor. And she comes back and says, you know, yes, you can come on Monday. And we're expecting to have the tests on Thursday, so that should be all good. So I get in my car. I have been taking this chemotherapy drug for almost 2 weeks. I didn't feel well at all. I had to drive in rush hour traffic 45 minutes down to their office. It was a real stretch for me. And so then I check in, and what I do when I'm really stretched by life, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, I just let everything go, close my eyes, and just am there with myself. I have learned to not leave myself. And yes, there are times when I do leave myself. And you'll hear about that a little bit later. And so I checked in, and I just went and sat down, and I just closed my eyes, and I just found my breath and came home to my heart and, you know, was in and out because people would come and go, and people would be, you know, talking to the receptionist, or people would come out from the back room and talk as they left. And, you know, so it wasn't as deep of a connection as I do every morning. But still, there was that sense of keeping on coming back to not leave myself when I most needed myself. And so about 50 minutes into this process, and nobody has come out to get me. And so I go up to the receptionist and said, can you check? You know, I checked in 50 minutes ago. Well, it was at least another 10 minutes before somebody came out, and it was the nurse, and she sat down beside me, and she said, I'm so sorry to tell you, the bone marrow kits didn't come. And I immediately teared up, you know, and I'm sure she could see that. I mean, this was just such overwhelming news, you know, that this meant I had to take the chemotherapy drug until the test came. I was exhausted from the chemotherapy drug. I was exhausted from the drive, and I've been sitting there for an hour. And she said, but let me go check. It may be down in the pharmacy, and, you know, and I'll check and see. Well, thank God it took 15 minutes because I needed that 15 minutes. Because rather than grounding in myself, my attention went right up into my struggling mind. And oh my God, I was frustrated. The feelings of anger and resentfulness and entitlement. Oh, entitlement. You know, that they just came roaring through a freight train, you know, in my mind, and my mind, you know, talked about, you know, okay, well, you know, when she comes out next, we're going to ask for an office manager, and we are going to tell them this is not okay. You know, this is the third time that they have promised something and it hasn't happened, you know. So my mind was having a feast around I was right and they are wrong. And this is one of the favorite, you know, movements in our, well, conditioned self, ego, storyteller. I call it the storyteller conditioned self. Eckhart Tolle calls it the mind made me. I love that. Your mind created a me that talks in your head all day long, that most of us think of as ourselves. If this mind made me says we're mad, we're mad. If it says we're glad, we're glad. If it says we're sad, we're sad. And so, oh, my mind made me was having a feast, and because it loves to be right and make other people wrong. And all you have to do is look at the evening news right now, and it's all over the place. So, in the middle of this storm, I remembered, life is my teacher. It is my friend. There's a wonderful line from one of Rumi's poems. You know, Rumi is that, oh, God, I can't remember. He's 700 or 800 years ago, born in Persia, you know, one of the most popular poets, you know, in the world right now. And because he speaks about this awakening this is happening in human consciousness, this awakening that's happening, you know, of realizing that we are not this struggling self inside of us, that we are that which can see it. And the more we see that, the more our attention is present for life rather than following our thoughts wherever they go. And that's awakening, is being here for life no matter how it is appearing. And so the line from the Rumi poem is the friend, and it's with a capital F. So it's whatever that is that, you know, keeps the planets spinning as they do, that, you know, heals the cuts on your skin, that grew you out of one cell that was so tiny you couldn't even see it with a naked eye. The friend who knows more than you do will bring illness and difficulty as medicine. And that is what I remembered. You know, it was like this little candle flame in the middle of a hurricane, you know, and the candle, you know, would blow out and come back and blow out and come back. But I kept on remembering, this is an opportunity. That generally what we do is we turn away from discomfort. And we strike out, or we shut down, or we go eat the thing, or drink the thing, or smoke the thing. And I have done enough of this kind of work to realize that to stay lost in the discomfort, or to try to get away from it, is like that quicksand I was talking about earlier. And I realized that I had hardened. I was barely breathing. My body was tight. My shoulders were raised. You know, my chin was out. My you know, whole neck was contracted. You know, there was a tight fist in my solar plexus, and there was a lump in my throat. That was what was underneath all of this. The great sadness of not being met, not being seen, of not being heard. So I realized I wanted to open my mind and heart rather than getting caught. Even though my mind wanted to be right and wanted to strike out, I wanted to open more than I wanted to stay caught in the reactive mind. You know, all over the world, we strike out at the so-called enemy, and this just increases our pain, whether it's, you know, in our you know, primary relationship, or whether it's bosses with you know, their employees, or employees with bosses, or whether it's politicians, or whether it's, you know, dictators, you know, we have all been trained to strike out rather than bring our attention into what we are experiencing. And I ask myself, do I want to add to this aggression in the world? Now, of course, the answer was no, but God, we hate our edge. We hate our edge. We hate that place where everything inside of us wants to turn away, that wants to turn off, and we ease this pain by reacting and you know, going to our compulsions, but we don't see how much suffering we create for ourselves if we try to move away from what we are experiencing. We suffer. And all you have to do is look at your compulsions and see what I mean by that. The U.S. Surgeon General report is 98% of every pound that is lost in the U.S. is gained back plus some within a year and a half. And the 98% is very startling, but the key is the plus some, because what we try to resist controls us. Yes, you may be able to muscle one compulsion to the ground, but another one will take its place, because compulsions will not be healed through control, and our pain will not be lessened by us either falling into it, denying it, or trying to run away from it. So, my mind was still trying to make its case. Oh, my God, it loves a good situation where it's right and the other people is wrong. But I knew that I was the one that would pay the price. I would pay the price physically in the tightening of my body. I would pay the price emotionally by all the really difficult feelings that would move through me. And I would pay the price mentally, because my mind wasn't quiet and calm. It was agitated and stormy. So I began to turn to my breath. And I don't know what I would do without my breath. I mean, I wouldn't be alive without my breath, but to actually work with the breath in a way that actually calms the agitation in our mind and in our body. And after all these years, the core breath that I use when I am really upset is the long, slow out breath. And I couple it with that great sound of letting go. I didn't in the doctor's waiting room, but I said that sound silently. And it has been shown that one of the things that this kind of long, slow out-breath does is it massages your vagus nerve, which is one of the primary switches of turning on or off the stress reaction in your mind, the fight-or-flight reaction in your mind. And so I just would breathe, and then it was a little bit like my attention was a little bit like a Mexican jumping bean. You would jump up into, you know, the stories in my mind, and you know, I'm right and they're wrong. And then I would bring it back, and I would said to my mind, I know this is hard for you, but I want you to remember that this is where the good stuff is. To bring our attention down, I call it the down arrow, you know, bring my attention into the rising and falling of my breath. And then, of course, it would pop back up again, and then I would bring it down. But slowly and surely, I began to be able to rest more in my breath. My attention would still pop up to the mind because I wasn't feeling well, and you know, and I didn't know where she was, and you know, what was going to happen when she came back, and then, you know, back I go. So I started sticking with myself. I started relaxing in the middle of all of this chaos. and more I was getting lost in these feelings. I wasn't suppressing them. I was just letting them be there. And of course, it helped me immensely to bring my attention, to ground it into my body, because, you know, it's a sanctuary. Not only our breath, but our whole body is a sanctuary. And most of us don't even know what I'm talking about, because we left our body so young, so young. There's this, you know, slow motion video I saw once of children, you know, on those, I think they call them monkey rings or something. You know, there are a whole series of rings in the playground, and they did these slow motion pictures of you know, young children, you know, swinging from one ring to the other. And you could see that they would actually let go of the last ring before they caught the next ring. And the older children wouldn't let go of the last ring until they caught the next. We learned how to hold on. And so that tightens our bodies. So, you know, I grounded in my breath, but then I would open up the field of my attention and just notice that, you know, the stiffness of my neck, and just acknowledging it, you know, and the knot in my stomach, and simply acknowledging it. I know this doesn't seem like a lot, but that is a moment of consciousness. And as I did that, the frustration, the anger that was tightening my shoulders and my neck, and the frustration that was tightening my stomach began to calm down. And then what I noticed was the lump in my throat. And underneath all of that, and it's true for all of us all the time, underneath all of our agitation is this deep sadness that we all carry, that has been waiting our whole life for us to say hello. And by now I was grounded enough in my body that it was safe for my heart to open. And my heart just flooded with just really tender-hearted care for this one inside of me that was so overwhelmed, that felt so abandoned and so afraid of what was going to happen in the future. And I knew all the way through that my choice was to become curious about what I was experiencing or escape. To bring my attention into my immediate experience, directly into it, and to see what was upset. And the more I did this, the more I saw that this was a very familiar state. I had been in this place 1,000,000,000 times in my life. And, you know, I like what Stephen Levine calls this awakening back into life is a gradual awakening. And I think it's, for me, it's a little bit like peeling layers of the onion, and you get to be present for something, and then, you know, a month later, a year later, you get to be more deeply present for it. And I don't think I had ever been as present as I was for this helpless, hopeless despair that had been initially covered over with anger and agitation and entitlement, and I was right and you were wrong. And as my heart opened more and more, it became so uninteresting to attack and make the nurse or the doctor or the office manager wrong. Because I realized that I, too, have had days where I was unskillful and missed things. And more, I came back to the newness of this moment. All of a sudden, there was no story, that this was no ordinary room I was in. You know, this was fresh and new. This moment of my life was fresh and new. And I knew that that was the truth. I could hear the music of my life, the sound of people's voices, you know, the soft music in the background, you know, the opening and closing of doors. And I knew I was again fully present for life. I was again back home in this moment. So then the nurse came out. Such perfect timing. And she sat down and said, no, we can't find the test. And again, there was that split second where the mind wanted to go on a tirade. I said, no, we're not going to add to the suffering of the world. But I did say, okay, I have three questions I want to have answered. And I was pretty firm about this. I said, when can we have the test? Can I do the blood test? Because I was down there for a blood test and for a bone marrow biopsy. Can I do that today? And if I get to do that, can I stop this chemotherapy drug that makes me so sick? And so she said, yes, you can do the blood test. Let me go find out from the doctor, you know, about the, you know, whether you can stop the drug and when we think we'd have the test in. And so she went back again. And so again, I had another, you know, this was about maybe 5 minutes. I had another opportunity to just close my eyes and bring my attention to the down arrow rather than going up into my head, down into my breath, down into my body. And she came back and said, yes, we can do the blood tests. And for the other two questions, you need to see the doctor. So we went in to see the other really important point. I did ask her, and I do have you. I have one question for you. Why did it take an hour for somebody to come out and tell me there was no test kit for the bone marrow today? And she was talking very rapidly, and she just gave a lot of different reasons about why that didn't happen, and I just couldn't even hardly follow her. And I realized, okay, I've done that too. When I put on the spot, you know, I have come up with a lot of excuses and so on and so forth. There was no apology in there, you know, at all. And I thought, again, I can harden or I can say, okay, let's go do the blood test. And so we had a wonderful connection during the blood test. And that meant a lot to me because it could have gone so much the other way because I fell into my reactive mind. So then I went in and saw the doctor, and they said that they would do the blood test. This was a Wednesday. They would do the blood test next Monday, and they would call me if the test hadn't come in before I came. I said, thank you. That means a lot to me. And he said, I still don't know whether I can get you on the new drug, but we need to do the bone marrow test. And so then he checked me and gave me a physical, and my spleen is enlarged, which may mean further complications. So in this process, and so then I said goodbye. I've been there for 2.5 hours. I was exhausted. I wish somebody had been there with me because I was too tired to ask any questions. It was just, you know, it was just overwhelming. So I got in my car, and I now am in the tail end of rush hour traffic. I am so tired, you know. So I stop at the grocery store on the way home. And I just got a little treat, not a big one, you know, and came home and had dinner and ate the little treat. Because at that point, I didn't have the capacity to turn towards anymore. I was just too tired, and there was no judgment inside of me. I just, you know, I was awake enough to have my heart still open and say, I understand, I understand, I understand. And so then I did go back in to get the bone marrow test. When was it? A week ago. All the days blur. But anyway, I won't hear the results for at least another week. And then, depending on the results, they may be able to get me on this new drug that doesn't make you sick and that can actually, in a few cases, actually reverse the mutation. And so then after they get the bone marrow test results, then it will be 2 weeks before we hear from the manufacturer, at least. So again, there is that place of the mind wants answers. And that just tightens me. This whole process, this is what I call becoming a tightness detective. Our natural state is free-flowing aliveness. Just watch babies, madness, sadness, gladness, just dance through them. You know, they don't get migraine headaches from tension, you know. They slowly learn how to tighten and resist and turn away. And so much of awakening is about softening and opening and turning towards, and that is what I, well, that's the core of my life, and that is what I was able to do, even when the mind was going bonkers, even though the mind was really, really, really in super uber reaction mode. But for all of us, that will happen. Life is a constantly changing process. It's like winter closes, spring opens. And then fall closes again, and then winter closes, and then spring opens. The same is true for you and I. We think that we can kind of nail it down, but if we're really honest with ourselves, we can't. You know, it's one day we're feeling well and our heart is open, and the next day we wake up and we have an upset stomach, and we find out that our car battery is died and we're going to be late to work on the day of an important meeting, and the mind just goes crazy. We all have an edge. My edge used to be just coming out of a room, you know, and having to talk to anybody. And now, you know, I've traveled the world, you know, I have a wonderful life. But now my edge is opened up so deeply that my edge comes when I get really difficult news, you know, which, you know, wakes up that fear of dying and that we all carry, and that the support that I need, it just kept on leaving. And this somewhere in that, sitting in that waiting room, I realized this is what I experienced when I was young, because, you know, my hands were bound, you know, because I wasn't even held much when I was being fed. I was bottle propped, and I sucked my fingers, and they painted them with bad tasting stuff. And then I sucked my thumb, and then they painted it, and sucked my fingers. They painted it, so I sucked through all the bad tasting stuff. And then they splinted my hands and would tie them down at night. And so that feeling of being abandoned and all alone has been the core edge for me. Is I've had to work really hard, slowly and surely, to get close enough to that feeling that I don't leave myself. And on that day, I didn't. I'm so grateful for that opportunity. I don't want to go through it again, but I am so grateful for that opportunity. So you have an edge too. It's very interesting to ask yourself, where are my edges? Where is it that I tighten rather than ground and open? Where is it that I react rather than respond? And that's the good place. Now, you may only be able to stay for a split second. You may only be able to notice that you are tightening. You may be able to only notice that you're reacting before you fall hell's bells into this reaction, which tightens your body and tightens your mind and closes your heart. But that moment is a moment of consciousness. That moment is a moment where you are relating to the struggles inside of you rather than being caught in them. And who you are, who you really are, is the space the struggles are happening in. And I'm here to tell you, because, you know, I've worked with people for over 30 years, and I've rarely met people that were as caught as I was and, you know, didn't die. And I am here to tell you that it is totally possible to learn how to strengthen the muscle of your attention enough so that you can relate to your struggles rather than being lost in them, so that your struggles actually open your heart. And so as you maneuver through your life, you become a healing presence in the world because you are here for life. You are no longer afraid of different states because you have met them inside of you, so people can act in the weirdest of ways and you don't get caught. You stand and bear witness with your heart. So every day, every single day, you will get opportunities to see where you react and to learn how to respond. Of course, just know that when you meet your edge, you'll freeze. You know, when I met my edge finally on the drive home, I froze. And I bought a treat. I didn't buy, you know, a huge amount. I just bought a very special chocolate bar, you know, that was different. I have a chocolate bar in my house at all times because I want my compulsion to know that if it wants something, it's there. And that's why it's been so calm for years. But this was a special, white chocolate, dark chocolate with apple bits in it. Oh, my God, it was so delicious, you know. But I had met my edge, and I didn't judge myself for that. And when I crawled into bed that night, my heart opened and said, I'm with you. I know that this has been a difficult day, but I am here with you now. So how do you learn how to do this? You know, it helps immensely to give yourself the gift of at least a couple of minutes a day where you choose a focus in life, whether it's the sounds or the sensations in your body or the rising and falling of your breath. And that's your anchor. And this kind of meditation isn't about trying to get to a particular state. This is all about being with what is. And so in the beginning, you learn how to strengthen the muscle of your attention by noticing your anchor. Let's say it's the breath, and you're just riding it. In breath, turn. Out breath, turn. In breath. Oh, my God, I think my pants are getting tighter. Oh, my God, I shouldn't have had that second helping last night. Oh, my friend asked me to join Weight Watchers. I don't know. Should I join Weight Watchers with her? And then all of a sudden you're off to the races in the stories in your mind. No judgment. No judgment. When you notice your attention is in the up arrow, it's up in your head again, you just bring it back to your focus. It doesn't even matter if you stay on the focus for just a split second. In that moment, you have strengthened the muscle of your attention. And if you sit for 5 minutes every day, and consistency is far more important than quantity. Don't, you know, buy into the thing you have to sit for 20 minutes twice a day and whatever. You know, 5 minutes. Then slowly and surely you'll want to do more. You won't do more because you should do no more because I hear it, meditation helps me. You will want to do more because you'll begin to see there's a huge difference between having your attention lost in the stories in your head and having it here for life. And more, you'll strengthen that muscle of attention so you can do what I did in that waiting room, that I could see what my mind was doing. And yes, at the beginning, I had moments where I was really seduced into it because the mind loves to be right, you know, and make other people wrong. And, you know, it was so overwhelming to hear after waiting for an hour that the test kit was not there. But slowly and surely, with the strength of my attention, I was able to bring it out of the struggles and bring it back into this moment where all the good stuff is. So as you maneuver throughout your life, start with small disturbances. Begin to see that there's a huge difference between tightening and reacting and closing off and going towards softening, opening, grounding in this moment. So once you have started developing the muscle of your attention, and if sitting doesn't work for you, then do it in your daily walk or run and have your focus be, you know, your feet hitting the ground, you know, or, you know, maybe the rising and falling of your breath as you're running. You know, everybody is a little bit different, but choose a focus, whether you're moving or you're sitting, where you return back to it without judgment when you find yourself going away. And that begins to strengthen the muscle of your attention. So that start with a cold. Stephen would say, my main mentor, Stephen Levine, would say, one day you will be on your deathbed, and if you haven't cultivated this way of being with life, it will be overwhelming. But he said, use the small discomforts of your life to begin to go towards rather than away. Start with a cold. Start with a small headache. If it's a cold, you know, how do I know I have a cold? You know, if it's your nose is itching, go to your nose. Describe it to yourself. If it's an ache in your sinuses, is it more on the left or is it more on the right? Or, you know, if it's in your chest, you know, what does that feel like? Is it like an elephant sitting on your chest? Or if it's a small headache, you know, is it more on the right or the left? Does it throb? Does it tingle? Does it come and go? Is it a dull ache, or does it have sharp knife edges to it? Again, I want you to get that sense of curiosity, not the kind of curiosity we usually have. You know, oh, I wonder what that's all about. You know, up into our head, up arrow, down arrow curiosity. What is right now? You can also use small frustrations, maybe like a longer wait than you want, you know, for your yearly physical at the doctor's office, or maybe it's a bug bite and it itches. That slowly and surely, as you develop that muscle of attention, you will be able to work up to being as curious about a feeling of shame as you are about a bug bite. You'll be able to be curious about the experience of not mattering, like I did in that doctor's office, of, you know, a major disappointment, like being, you know, not getting the job you wanted, or the feeling of being rejected by somebody, or you know, being in rush hour traffic and have somebody cut you off. And you're just ranting and raving at them, and all of a sudden you go, oh, anger is here, rather than I am angry and I'm going to tailgate the guy. You know, oh, anger is here. That is a moment of consciousness. This struggling mind is what causes us to be cut off from life. It's what causes us to put a veil between us and the living moment of life. And if all you can notice is that you're caught, that's a moment of consciousness. And so slowly allow yourself to work up to actually beginning to breathe, you know, when, you know, sometimes you can't even, you know, I mean, you're breathing, but you can't open your breath, you know, when challenges come, you know. But slowly and surely, you'll be able to touch these different aspects of struggle with your heart, and they will lose their power over you. Now, remember, this is easier said than done, because we've been highly conditioned to turn away and react. And this can be very scary, because the last time that we were fully here for life, we got the living bejesus scared out of us. You know, we were innocent and wide open, and we're just, you know, in the grocery store, you know, going down these really tall aisles, and we make this noise, and it kind of echoes. Oh, we're just having the best time, you know, yelling loudly, and a parent says, "Stop that!" And you can just feel, you know, you feel that tightening. The last time that we were fully open to life, we got scared out of it. But you're not a child anymore. And to open to life again is scary to the mind because it's got all these walls built up that, you know, no, you're going the wrong direction. You're not. You can't be open to life because that's where the bad stuff is. Well, that's where the good stuff is, and you need to be very patient and very gentle with your mind. That's why I said to my mind, but remember, this is where the good stuff is. So ask yourself where your limit is. You may be so deeply sensitive like I am that it doesn't take much for my whole system to react. And, you know, your place of reaction may be when you're rock climbing on a cliff and some of your equipment has broken. All of us have different limits. Know and respect your limits. Know and respect that when you're tightening, there's something inside of you that needs you. Let tightening be your guide, whether you catch it in your body or whether you catch it in your mind that you have started a whole litany of self-pity or victim or judgment of other people or anger or resentment. Let that be your guide. Oh, and if you can't do anything, at least ask life, I'm noticing this is where I tighten. I need some help here, and then just let that go, and life just waits for the opening of that kind of question. You know, what do I need to do here that's for the highest good? And even if you don't do anything in that moment, you just get caught in the reaction. That moment matters because it is accumulative. It's like drops of water in a bucket, and you do this awakening work, and you know you do it for, you know, 6 months, and you look down, and the bottom of the bucket isn't even covered yet with water, and you think, oh, this is not working, you know. But I often tell people this is a little bit like a child learning how to walk. Oh, my God, in order to walk, the child needed to learn how to strengthen its muscles so it could lift up his head, you know, and then slowly turn over and then, you know, begin to crawl and then to begin to stand up on its own and begin to take a few steps and then begin to walk on its own and then run on its own. This is not the quick fix we're talking about, but as far as I can see, it is really, truly the way out. But it is not a quick fix. But know that every moment you bring your attention back, whether you just sit for 5 minutes every day and you wander off for 4.5 minutes of that, then you bring your attention back and you notice, let's say you're listening to your sounds, and you just notice the sounds around you. Slowly and surely, just like that child strengthened its muscles enough so it could walk, you will be able to walk into consciousness. So this just popped in my mind. This is a metaphor. I love metaphors because a picture is worth 1,000 words, but I just love this metaphor. These difficult places, these upsets, we're turning them into gold. What we usually do is it's like a bug that is just driving us crazy, and it just, flies around us and and we try to swat it away. The bug represents the doorway, the challenges that are the doorway in your life. And we try to go into another room and it follows us. And then we decide that we're in the wrong relationship. So we get into another relationship and we think, oh, this is wonderful. And then the darn bug shows up again. And then the bug begins to sting you. You thought it was a fly, but oh my God, it's got a stinger on it. So what we do is we put a bag over us, all the way over us. And we think, whew, the bug can't get to us anymore. But let me tell you, that cuts you off from life. And it's hot and it's stuffy in there. And then one day you whip the bag off and this bug lands on your hand. And for the first time in your life, you say, okay, I'm just going to be curious. And you realize it's the most beautiful little honeybee. And you realize that as you give it your attention, it's talking to you. And it has great wisdom to share with you. So know that I know that all the upsets, the difficult places in your life are not here because you've done something wrong. God has fallen asleep on the job. They did something wrong, especially your parents, and now you're being punished or whatever. Your challenges are for you, and you can turn your upsets into gold. Thank you all for listening, and namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.